I recall my first conversation about race. It went like this. Your daddy's chocolate, your mama's vanilla, and y'all came out fudge. That also led me to my first fist fight, which I won because my sister helped. She knew how to fight, I didn't. I was the talker. But it also made me real, that was the first time I realized that race really matters. It also made me realize that it mattered who my parents were. And I think the reason that we fought over that was that there was some truth to it. My father is a very dark-skinned African-American man. My mother is a very light-skinned African-American woman. Both of them were born in the 1930s in Topeka, Kansas, and we all know that's a place where race really matters, still, pretty much. My father was a fighter pilot in the Marine Corps. He was the first black pilot they ever had. He went on to become their first black general. His job required us to move all the time. We moved every year, every other year. Wherever we went, we were always the black family. There was never any question that we were black. There was no confusion, no questions. In fact, when I was 10, we were living in the Bay Area in California. And my sister grew, Gail, she was such a radical. She grew this huge monster afro. And she told people she was Angela Davis. It was 1967, we lived near Oakland. They actually believed her. One day she came and got me from my classroom. I was in the sixth grade and she said, the Black Panthers are coming, the Black Panthers are coming. I'm like, let's go. So we ran home. In 1968, the family moved to Washington, D.C. And I remember being in California, watching the race riots and watching D.C. burn and thinking, oh my God, that's where we're going. And I was scared. But when we got there, the riots had ended and we found that we no longer were the only black family on the block. We were no longer the only black family living on base. Everybody was black, different shades, chocolate, brown, black, white, black people that look white, beige. But there was never any confusion. There was never a question as to who was who and what was what. I graduated from high school in 1975, went up to Maine, Lewiston, Maine. There really were no issues there either. There was never any question that I was black. I mean, there were problems about how you're gonna get your hair done. You didn't. I used to tape Quiet Storm. Does anybody remember Quiet Storm? And I'd take it up there with me. After I got out of college, I went to law school at W&L in Lexington, Virginia. And again, no questions about who was black and who wasn't black and who was white and who wasn't white. There were a lot of rules, though. You didn't date the white guys. You didn't study with the white guys. You could hang out with the white girls, but don't ever forget where you came from. The rules kept you safe, and we followed the rules. For the first 25 years of my life, I never, ever doubted that the world saw me as what I am, a black woman. It all changed in 1982 when I moved to Baltimore. I had been here for about a month. I was working downtown. Here about a month, my car got towed. It was really bad. I'd never had a car before, to be honest, and I'd never had a car towed. So I got in a taxi, and we're going up Charles Street, and I said to the cab driver, where are we going? I said, you know, my car's over at Greenwoods. Where is that? The cab driver looked in his rearview mirror, and he said, that's where all the black people are. Okay? And I thought, no. He thinks he's talking to a white woman. That's not okay. But I did the calculation. Strange city, going to a strange place by myself. I didn't want any trouble. I just wanted my car back. About a month after that, a short while after that, one of the partners at the law firm pulled me aside and whispered, are you Samoan? It's like, no, I'm not Samoan. I'm black. He goes, no, your eyes, your nose, your skin. I'm thinking, what is with these white men? They think they know me. Maybe it's because he was a lawyer. You know, they know me better than I know me. It didn't stop there. I had my race reassigned so many times since I've been in Baltimore. I'm not a bad driver, but I have gotten speeding tickets and I've run a few red lights. Every time I've gotten a ticket for race, it says white. The last time I got one, I decided I'm fighting it. So I go over to North Avenue, you know, the district court, and I'm in the room with, I've hardly ever been a defendant. I have, but, you know, so here I am with all the other violators, and they want to know, well, what's your defense? And I said, well, I didn't get a ticket because I was speeding. I got a ticket because the cop saw me on Greenmount Avenue, and he thought he saw a white woman driving a black car with a big black man. Not a reason for a ticket. And the crowd cheered. They're like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, yeah, yeah. The judge was like, you know, that's funny, but $200, your points. And I said, well, I made my point. I think the funniest case of mistaken identity was at my husband's office. We'd been married for about 5 years when he came home one night. He had this wonderful coworker. He's since gone on to his great reward, Mr. Buddy. He was wonderful. Rob came home one night and said, Mr. Buddy thinks I'm married to a white woman. And I'm thinking, who? What white woman have you been hanging out with? Because it's you, I mean, me. Anyway, the scariest mistake was the night that I was robbed. We live in Charles Village. We'd been married less than a year. It's a Sunday night. I'm by myself getting groceries out of the car. The man comes to me totally like in my face, literally, and says, don't make me do it. And all I can think of what his eyes look like, his teeth. He had the fronts, gold teeth. What his voice was like. Undone, just totally undone. The next morning, I'm working at the St. Francis Academy job fair, and I think Paul probably was there, and I see my robber coming in. And he comes right to the table where I'm working with my sister-in-law registering people. And you know that feeling, you feel it in your arms, your hair stands up. I heard his voice. I saw the fronts. I knew. I got up, quietly called the police. They came. We got him in a room, confronted him, and he looks at me and says, don't ID me, don't ID me. And I said, you know, I didn't want you to rob me, but you did. And he looks, he goes, I would never do nothing like that to no black woman. And I'm thinking, oh my God, here we go again. But it was sad. He would rob a white woman. There's honor among thieves, right? Eventually, I mean, when people would ask me, what are you? I just started to say, whatever you want me to be. It's just easier. And that was until I met Lois. Lois is white, in her 70s, frowsy, grew up near the Natty Bow sign, and my new secretary. Everything was fine for a while. She'd come into my office, see the pictures of my father, my husband, my grandchild, who's gorgeous but very dark-skinned. The Barack Obama bobbleheads undid her. She finally got up her nerve one time to say, what are you? And I'm like, I'm ready for you. I said, I'm a partner here. You know that. She goes, no, what are you? Well, I do products liability, litigation, love to go to trial. Give me a case. I'll try it all day long. No, what's your background? Well, I was born in California. Then we went to Hawaii. Da-da-da-da-da. This goes on for a while. And finally, I realized she, you know, I'll just put her out of her misery. I said, Lois, I'm black. My father's black, my mother's black, my brothers and sisters are black, my children are black, my husband is black, my grandchild is black, and even my car is black. I said, you know what? And also, I'm your boss. I know it's just a coincidence, but you know, things really changed after that. She stopped bringing me my mail, stopped answering the phone. Eventually, she just stopped. The other day, I was picking up my granddaughter from school. Is buckling in her, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm a grandmother. I don't really know how to do those car seats, but we're working to get her into her car seat, and she looks at me and she goes, Grandma Dana? Yes, Selena. Grandma Dana, you drive a black car. So yeah, I do, you're right. She goes, and Grandma Dana? When she's getting ready to say something important, she does it as a question. And Grandma Dana, you're black. I'm like, you're right. You're absolutely right. I wish that I had a tape recorder. I have one now. It's in my purse. She's going to say it again, and I'm going to record her. And the next time somebody wants to talk to me about my race, they'll hear Selena. Thank you.